Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? Welcome on into our Thursday, October 16th edition. Weekend kickoff rolling on today. Got a packed show to get to you. Plenty to talk about. LSU, the Saints, stuff around the NFL, college football, as well as we got preseason basketball finale for the Pelicans tonight. You can catch that against the Orlando Magic. Pregame at 5:30, 6 o'clock tip-off on the big 870 AM. That's because after we wrap up the show here at the Treasure Chest Casino at 7 on 105.3 FM, we'll have Thursday night football. And Mike, what a matchup. Cincinnati Bengals taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers, but it's the quarterbacks and their age that's really making the headlines in this one.
The other thing too is the Steelers have not had a good record on Thursday nights. They have not had a good record. And you got the two AARP guys playing against one another. So should be an interesting game, to say the least. Pittsburgh's really rolled it through really well. Cincinnati, with the injury to Joe Burrow, really has not been the same. And then no Trey Hendrickson tonight. But guess who gets called up to take his place? Isaiah Foskey.
A lot of Saints connections.
Oh, my goodness. Talk about a little bit of a drop-off there, to say the least. But,
if Foskey gets a sack against Rodgers tonight, I'm going to faint.
You know, one thing with Aaron, he's gotten rid of the football real quick this year. It's not been the gunslinger Aaron Rodgers. He's gotten rid of the football real fast, and I get it. You know, when you get up in age, and Aaron at one time was really at a high-level mobility, and he could get away from people, but, you know, not anymore with the Achilles and his age. It's all sort of caught up to him. But today the big news certainly is the proactive news done by University of Indiana, as they have gotten Kurt Cignetti to agree on a new 8-year contract that's going to pay him $11.6 million a year. Ka-ching. That contract is through 2033. Kurt Cignetti is 65 years old today. I mean, you know, at the moment, he's 65 years old. So, got a pretty good deal out of that. That's the way I look at it.
These coaching contracts now seem more ridiculous than players at times.
And, you know, Bobby was yowling, oh, they got to stop that. I said, I'll bet you a lot of money they ain't going to stop it. He was like, no, I'm telling you, you got to do like Texas Tech with McGuire. I was like, okay, that's a one-time deal. That's not going to happen all across college football. But, you know, with the jobs open at Penn State, and we know eventually at Florida, and the Arkansas job open, you know what's going to happen. Cignetti was going to get that phone call. Indiana said, none of that. But $11.6 million a year contract for Kurt Cignetti, and that'll take him, okay, if he coaches that long, he'd be 73 years old.
Yeah,
I don't think I'll be on the radio at that time, to be honest with you. But man, Kurt's done a great job with that Indiana program, really, really has. And man, to go to Eugene, Oregon, and to put that butt whipping he put on Oregon there,
right?
You haven't seen that in a long time. Oregon take a bit of a kick in the way they did.
Mike, looking at some of the Saints news from today, wrapped up practice already. The black and gold got the injury update for Thursday. A little bit of a change from yesterday. Thankfully, you see Ike Yiadom with his hamstring issue was limited at practice. Also limited Alvin Kamara after not practicing yesterday with the ankle issue. One thing's for sure with this team.
I don't think we're going to see Yiadom. I think
this is just a start
with him to get him back. I do think you'll see Kamara.
Need to see him, that's for sure.
Yeah. And he's had some big games also against the Bears. And so, you want Alvin ready to roll. And I think that's going to be something you're going to have to do against the Bears. You're going to have to try to run the football against them. You don't want that offense on the field for too long.
Well, and that Chicago defense, surprisingly, you look at the numbers, they're like third or fourth in the NFL right now, giving up 156 yards rushing a game.
I would say that's not good.
No.
So you know where to hit them. You know where to go with it. Now, they very opportunistic with turnovers. And so that's the other part of it. Can you take advantage of that and play a little keep away with the Bears? Because if you put them back on the field with DeAndre Swift as a runner receiver, Roma Dunsey, out on that field. They play a lot of 12 personnel, two tight end, so you'll see a lot of Cole Kmet and Colston Loveland, their first-round pick from Michigan. Luther Burden III, who I think they're going to probably play a little bit more. DJ Moore
is
questionable. He was limited today.
Yeah. He's dealing with a hip/groin. So yeah, who knows how he's progressing.
Something like that. But I hope he don't play. Let him take the week off and get all rested up. DJ Moore's had some big games against the Saints, especially when he was in Carolina.
Right. Exactly.
Man, he had some big games against the Saints. So we'll see. But I think the big difference in that team from last year is Caleb. How mature he is in that offense. It isn't all smooth. But, man, it's much better. He has always been a rhythm-type thrower. Last year, you saw him sort of a lot of impromptu plays. He would walk right into pressure.
Right.
This year, he stayed away from a lot of that. Now, what, he was sacked over 70 times last year? Come on, you can't do that in this league. You can't always blame it on the offensive line. Partially, that's you getting yourself sacked. But then they have the three guys in the middle. They brought in the center from Atlanta, then Jonah Jackson from the Rams at one guard.
They seem to
Joe
be pretty
Tunney
improved.
With the Chiefs. I thought early it was shaky.
Yeah.
But, man, I think they've started to get it together. The tackle position's got a young guy and a guy that's sort of a fill-in player that, man, I would try to get some edge pressure off those guys. The Commanders couldn't, though. They really couldn't. Manufacture that like they really wanted to. It's a game in Chicago where if they start trading point for point, you're not going to be able to keep up with the Bears.
This year, Saints doesn't want to do. We don't want to do that at all in games, man.
You want to keep that game in the, you know, if it's 23-20, something like that.
That seems to be the rage for sure.
But if you go more than that, you got some difficulties because this team's had so many troubles getting the ball in the end zone. You know, they settle for field goals and you got red zone issues. And the one thing I'll be interested in, because the one guy that knows a lot of the personnel on this team, certainly, is Dennis Allen. Knows a lot of that personnel.
That's more scary to me of him knowing the Saints so well than the guys here knowing what his scheme is, because that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, and, you know, most of the guys, when you talk to them about Dennis, it wasn't any friction. Now, I think the thing with Kendra Miller was a little bit different. Because I think, you know, he saw what a lot of people saw, that maybe Kendra wasn't mature enough at that time to handle the National Football League, and Allen got all over him about it, okay? And I'm going to sit you down. Okay, that's just the way it's going to be. But, you know, most of the players on the team, you know, if you talk to him away from the microphone, they didn't have a big issue with Dennis Allen at all, but they saw how the locker room just sort of unraveled. And when you're losing, that can happen. I always thought he was a really good defensive coordinator.
No doubt.
But he didn't play well to the big room.
Looking at things for the Bears injury report, Mike, another one that to make note of, definitely popping up today. Two, actually, players with DeAndre Swift with a groin issue was limited. And then Amon Ogbenbemiga, the linebacker over there.
I'd be much more concerned about that Swift guy.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He's definitely the horse over there.
My thing is, man, are they trying to play some kind of game with this this DeAndre Swift stuff? That came in late, right?
Yeah, that's today. They did a walkthrough yesterday since they did Monday Night Football. There was an estimated practice report. Today he was on it with a limited participation with a groin issue. I don't know how serious that is, but if the Saints don't have to face him,
that's a different issue.
That's a rushing and a receiving threat you take off the field right there.
Yeah, because, boy, he caught that ball out in the flat, man. And it was nobody catching him. He was gone. I've always liked him as a player.
Yeah.
He's a little undersized as a back, but, man, he's a spark plug guy, a lot of speed, very quick in space, but he's an eye runner, you can tell. Always got his head up. His vision is very, very good as a runner, and also been an outstanding receiver coming out of the backfield.
Going back to the injury report side for the Saints, Mike, positives also Chris Olave, Alante Taylor, limited yesterday. They're a full go today. So they got a nice little break on Wednesday's section, and we're back to being a full go today.
Yeah. And don't be surprised, Swift get that same designation.
Tomorrow you see full practice.
Exactly. Because you're a better team with Alante Taylor and Chris Olave on it. That's all I can tell you. You are. A lot of people, man, they got their hate for Chris Olave. Okay, I understand. He's dropped some passes this season. But you're a better team with him on there. We'll see what happens in the next couple weeks, how valuable he is. Because there is no doubt. Saints are getting phone calls.
Supposedly a lot for Olave. I've seen
Kamari, Olave, Carl Granderson. You know, those guys, come on. Teams that feel as though we need to make a playoff run and they need everybody needs an edge rusher, right?
Yes, sir.
Everybody needs another receiver, or most teams do. Everybody could use another running back. Well, a few teams really could use it, especially the Chargers. and Chiefs, you know, who knows what they do at running back, but. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens. And to me, I'm not the Red Cross. I ain't giving them away. You're going to have to pay me, substantial for them. I'm not just giving them away.
We're here at the Treasure Chest Casino weekend kickoff for folks this Thursday. Every Thursday, stop by and say hey. We're at inside the game bar and grill right next to the FanDuel Sportsbook. And plenty of action going on from college, NFL, Major League Baseball, playoff action, and getting ready for the Pelican season to open next week. Coming back with more of Sports Talk weekend kickoff edition right after this. Stay tuned on WWL, folks. Here to weekend kickoff edition of Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino every Thursday night. Now happy to welcome into the radio huddle Danny Cannell, checking in for Bet Online for updated college football playoff Heisman and college football week 8 lines. Danny Cannell, we always appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much.
What's up, fellas? How we doing? We enjoying this college football season or what, man? It's been a ton of fun. I think it's going to be a wild finish, too.
Yeah, it's a crazy finish. Other than Ohio State. Everybody else is sort of trying to catch up. Danny, I was going to ask you that first before we get into the games. You think about Ohio State. They lose 13 guys to the NFL in the draft. 4 other guys signed as free agents. Look where they are today. It's amazing that you can replenish that type talent that quickly, but that's why you got the transfer portal. And this may be Ryan Day's best coach team.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Now, look, they clearly have a lot of resources, right? They've got money to spend in the portal, so it's not surprising. But so does Texas. So does Oregon. So does Alabama. And to be there sitting there flawless and have a couple good, really good wins under their belt like they did against Texas in that week one and really start to dominate their opponents – it's just, and don't forget, they also replaced both coordinators.
That's right.
They had
right.
so many question marks, but I think it speaks to a couple things. One, a culture that was really probably one of the strongest cultures of winning excellence, similar to what Nick Saban had at Alabama during his run, similar to what Urban Meyer had at Florida back in his run when they were reeling off multiple national championships. It's just a standard that is set, and that comes from a healthy locker room so that when you got to have guys off to the NFL, the next class steps in, and a guy like Caleb Downs says, all right, this is the standard, young bucks. We're going to hold you to it, and you don't see any drop-off whatsoever.
No, none at all. And this young man, Arvell Reese, who I watched last year, he was a good player. Today, he's an upper echelon player. The development of players, sometimes it gets overlooked in college football to see that young talent develop. I'm going to throw you a game out. That this game used to be played in November. Man, growing up, I think, man, everybody watched it. USC Notre Dame. But it was a sort of a late November game. It was never in October. Now, just because of how everything is, your thoughts, USC Notre Dame, and that line's been either 8.5, 9, 9.5, depending on where you gamble.
So there's a couple things about that game that are interesting, because we just saw USC get a massive win at Michigan, and Lincoln Riley was like, hey, this was a Big Ten win where we showed we can physically hang with anybody. They've got a really good quarterback in Jaden Maiva who feels like he fits what Lincoln Riley wants to do perfectly. So you felt like maybe this line would be under a touchdown, around 5.5 potentially. But it's like, what? Well, they're probably paying attention to the injury reports and the weather, because USC has been banged up. They were missing their left tackle last week. I don't think he's coming back. They're down to their third running back, who's a walk-on freshman, who did step in and get 158 yards, but I still do think that's a drop-off. And the other aspect is there's weather. It's supposed to be rainy in South Bend and a little bit windy and blustery. So I think that's going to impact USC's ability to move the football. But still, 8.5, 9 points, I think USC is a really good football team. Call me a sucker, but I would go ahead and take those points with the underdog and the Trojans.
Danny, I always remember talking to Peyton Manning about this, and because of they didn't match up well against Florida. They got their doors blown off every time when he was there. Yeah. They'd play Steve Spurrier in Florida. But he was like, the game everybody wanted, Alabama. Tennessee at Alabama. And, man, you look at the Crimson Tide, over a touchdown favorite over the Volunteers.
They are really, really good. And I saw them in person in Tallahassee when they lost to Florida State. And everybody was ready to fire Kalen DeBoer, and they were ready to bench Ty Simpson. But that was really a galvanizing loss. That team came together. And I think it's also worthy to note that they didn't have Tim Keenan, their best defensive tackle. They didn't have Jam Miller, their starting running back. And Ty Simpson, that was his first game on the road as the starter at Alabama. Well, now that he got that one out of the way, he is playing quarterback as good as anybody in the country. And he's got weapons to work with. Guys like, we knew about Ryan Williams, but Jeremy Bernard and Isaiah Horton on the outside. And he throws the ball vertically in traffic. Maybe as good as anybody in the country. Now, Tennessee, I worry a little bit that they're kind of fraudulent. That's why I think that number's over a touchdown. Joey Aguilar's kind of taking a step back. They do lead the SEC in sacks. That'll be the thing. If they can pressure Ty Simpson and they can run the football on offense, I think they've got a chance. I don't see them doing that because Ty Simpson handles pressure really well. I think Alabama rolls in this one, although the games are starting to stack up where you wonder how fatigue and just getting bruises are starting to add up. But because it's at Bryant Denny, I give them the edge in this one. So I'll lay the points with Alabama.
None of us were doing radio when this happened. The last time Vanderbilt was a favorite over LSU, 1948 was the last year Vanderbilt was favorite over LSU, but yet they are today. And this game actually opened as LSU a favorite, and then has swung all the way now to Vandy, 2.5-point favorite over the Tigers.
Yeah, this one's it's hard to look at this line and believe it's real, right? And I think it's a testament to the job that Clark Lee has done building a roster that has been the most competitive, most physical, most stacked roster that Vanderbilt had probably in school history. And they got a quarterback who's really fun to watch, Diego Pavia, right? He can put the team on his back. He's a playmaker. He got himself into trouble against Alabama with a couple red zone interceptions, or else they might have been able to pull off that upset there. But I do look at LSU, and I think this is an opportunity for them to kind of showcase, maybe not the offense. It's crazy. Garrett Nussmeier had 8 300-yard passing games last year. He has yet to have one. And I don't know if it comes in this game. It probably doesn't, because they really have some issues along the offensive line. But I think this is where the defense steps up for LSU and gets it done. I still think the job that Blake Baker's done has been phenomenal. I think the defense steps up in a lower scoring game. So I'll go ahead and take LSU in those 2.5 points and trust a little bit more of the pedigree than I do at Vanderbilt.
Lane Kiffin's teams at Ole Miss have not matched up well against Georgia. Last year they came in sort of hot. They were a pick for a lot of people. Hey, this is the year they catch Georgia. They got steamrolled out of that one. Now playing Georgia again. I've watched Georgia, Danny. Nothing they do is elite, but they're good to very good at just about everything. They don't have the defense that they've had years ago because most of them cats is playing in the NFL. But, man, they find a way to win. They play that Kirby ball, and they got a little bit more on the edge at receivers than they've had the last couple years. Your thoughts, Ole Miss at Georgia, 7.5-point favorite.
So I totally agree with you. This Georgia team is good, but they don't have a Jalen Carter or a Jordan Davis, one of those just absolute monsters in the middle of that Georgia defense. But they're really well coached, right? We shouldn't expect anything else from Kirby Smart. The offense has been good. Like Gunnar Stockton, he's feisty. He's not an elite quarterback, but he can make some plays with his legs. And like he did on the road in Tennessee, he stepped up and made some huge throws. So he's more than capable of winning some of those big games. So I do like Georgia in this spot. Ole Miss, they've been good too, and I do think this is where I'm leaning on a lot of the home field advantages. That's why I like Alabama. That's why I like Georgia here. Trinidad Chambliss has been awesome. He's been such a great story for college football. Came out of nowhere. Nobody was talking to him. They were talking about Austin Simmons. He was playing at Division II Ferris State, as you guys know, but this is his first true road game. They played all games at home with Trinidad Chambliss. They did have the game at Kentucky, but that was Austin Simmons' game. This one would be a different animal. I think he'll make it competitive, but I could see Georgia pulling away with a touchdown late, sort of that where they squeeze the life out of the game. It's not too sexy. It's not pretty, but they get it done late. So I do like Georgia to take another step forward. A lot of people have been pointing out that Ole Miss is a little bit fraudulent with the ranking in front of their name just because they're undefeated, and I would tend to agree with that. I still think they might make the college football playoff. If they can win one of these next two games, they'll probably get in, but I think this is going to be a big test for them that I don't think they're ready for.
Georgia Tech, Duke, and we saw a lot of that Duke quarterback today when he was at Tulane a year ago, and, man, he can sling it. When he gets hot, Danny, he's a lot of trouble. But, man, one thing with Georgia Tech, you know what you get from them each time you hit the field against the Yellow Jackets. So your thoughts, Georgia Tech, Duke 1.5-point favorite.
Yeah, that's one of those weird ones where you see the ranked team, right, in Georgia Tech as an underdog playing against the unranked team in Duke. And Manny Diaz, you know, they have the two losses. They lost to Tulane and they lost to Illinois. And those games were one where Darian Mensen did not play his best football. He's been a little bit streaky, but they bounced back really nice. But I do like Georgia Tech here as a spot, as the underdog. Haynes King, he's kind of similar to Diego Pavia, where he just kind of puts the team on his back and wills the team to a win. He runs the ball a lot. He's had a 100-yard rushing game. He can make the throws, but it's not the prettiest arm talent or somebody that's going to be talked about for the NFL draft. And to your point, what they do is they just figure out ways to win games. And that's what I think they do against Duke. I think they'll try to run the football. And I do think their defense will be able to harass Darian Mensen and maybe making one of those interceptions like he had against Illinois or one of those turnovers he had in the red zone that will help push Georgia Tech over the top. And that is, speaking of like road environments, there is no environment at Duke. So I don't think that'll be much of a challenge for Georgia Tech to deal with.
I will ask you about Penn State, Iowa. Sort of a strange game. I got a couple guys here. We're doing this at the Treasure Chest here in Kenner, in Louisiana. But, man, they all over Iowa in this game. Your thoughts? Penn State, Iowa. Penn State with Coach Smith now taking over for James Franklin. Man, you know how Iowa plays. I mean, you know, they're not putting up a lot of points up on the board, no matter what. But your thoughts on that game, Iowa-Penn State. Iowa, 3-point favorite over Penn State.
Isn't that wild? If we would have talked about that line at the beginning of the year when Penn State was a preseason favorite to win it all, and it's just remarkable. The fall from the top of Penn State where just, you know, 2-3 weeks ago they were in overtime against Oregon, and then now they've got their coach fired. So I like Iowa in this one. Penn State has not been a good football team. Even the first three games against lesser opponents, they weren't really blowing out the opponents like they were supposed to. They weren't covering spreads. They weren't padding their stats. It was kind of ugly. And then, of course, they get exposed against Oregon and then lose twice as three-touchdown favorites to UCLA and Northwestern, who's not a very good football team. I think it makes all the sense in the world that Iowa is the favorite here. The one thing you have to wonder, is there a, you know, an interim coach bump? Like, because has the team woken up and all of a sudden are they going to be inspired? I don't necessarily know if that's the case, because I think the players actually did like James Franklin, right? I mean, they liked him. So I almost feel like Penn State could be one of those teams that just kind of, you know, goes away quietly and kind of ends the season with a whimper. They might eke out a couple more wins, But Iowa's, you know, kind of quietly been a good football team. So, and that's a tough place to play, too. So I do like Iowa to win and cover that game because I just don't trust Penn State right now.
And, Danny, real quick, I know the Heisman Trophy odds have shifted dramatically from the start of the year. How are things looking right now? Is it Carson Beck the clear way guy right now?
Yeah, see, the only thing that worries me about Carson Beck is because he already had his monster games, right? He had the game against Florida State. He had the game against Notre Dame. And they do have a game tomorrow night against Louisville. But, like, that's not really going to resonate with a lot of people. So he can continue to pad his stats so that he can be in the conversation. But I think Heisman voters love Heisman moments. And, like, his Heisman moment might have come against Florida State with four touchdown passes and zero interceptions and some beautifully thrown balls. Meanwhile, guys like Ty Simpson, you know, will have opportunity after opportunity. It's better competition that probably resonates. Now, the one thing is, too, those guys could – Ty Simpson could lose. Like, if Alabama loses, he's going to get knocked down a run. So, if Carson Beck just continues to kind of steer the ship and they are undefeated going to the ACC championship game and they win that game, he can absolutely win it and just everybody else falls by the wayside. I do think somebody else is going to step up and make some
Mendoza.
Big plays. Yes, exactly. Fernando Mendoza has been outstanding. And if he, you know, knocks off Ohio State in a Big Ten championship game, that's the resounding image you got, the Heisman moment, then he definitely would be somebody that would be there. Also, Ty Simpson, I talked about him. I like those guys probably a little bit better because they have more opportunity.
Always awesome insights. Appreciate the time. Danny Cannell, CBS Sports Analyst, courtesy of Bet Online. Thank you so much for the time, man.
Thank you, Danny.
Appreciate you guys. Always great catching up. We'll see you.
All right.
Check out Bet Online for updated college football playoff Heisman and college football week 8 lines. We're going to take a break here on Weekend Kickoff. Come back with more right after this on WWL.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike Dettelier here for Parish Construction and Roofing. Talking to my good friends down on the bayou in the home of Thibodaux area, also in the River Parish. Hey, we all know with storms, wind, salt air, hey, they can be brutal on your roof. That's why you need Parish Construction and Roofing. They're committed to keeping homes on the bayou and in the River Parish, hey, and also businesses covered with expert roof repairs, replacements, commercial and residential projects. They do the work right the first time with trust and integrity our community deserves. And with Ryan Terrio as a partner, you know you're getting strong Louisiana roots. Don't risk your home. Our business, do business with someone you know. Hey, give them a call at Parish Construction and Roofing. You can check them out at parishbuilt.com.
We're back here on Weekend Kickoff edition of Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino, gearing up for a matchup Saturday, Mike. We talked a little bit about it with Danny Cannell. LSU taking on Vandy. The Tigers an underdog going to Nashville. Some injury report for them. We saw that probable for this game is Anderson and Mbenga, questionable Whit Weeks and Butler, and then doubtful is Gooden. A little bit of a surprise, I guess, with Whit Weeks.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell happened with him.
I saw on social media that there was shaving his hair.
He's walking with a boot
right
on his leg. And that's not a good sign for LSU. One thing, Whit Weeks, man, he's around the ball. Now, he's a bit of a guesser, but, man, he makes a lot of good decisions on where to go. It'd be great to have Aaron Anderson back. I think that's big for LSU because he was a playmaker for them early in the season, Aaron Anderson. All these guys come in with all these credentials, Barrion Brown, you know, Anderson, all this and that. Chris Hilton, he's on the all-potential team. You got to catch the ball. I'm on you wide open. You can't drop that. You got to make that play for your team. Didn't happen. Aaron Anderson, if he's in this game, that's a big plus for LSU.
The Tigers taking on Vandy in 11 a.m. kickoff, man.
They don't like to play early.
I don't think we like them playing early either. I know you got an early pregame.
Yeah, we on 7 to 9 tomorrow morning. Me and Herb Tyler
Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgate Show, and then game will start at 11 o'clock, and then
but
Herb
you can
and
still
I finish
see you guys
it.
At Acme. Still.
Yeah, we'll be there 4 to 6, kind of wrapping things up after Favor Wright and the crew, Hunt and the gang. They finish up then.
Hopefully
Herb
after
and I
a W.
Go, yeah, they got a big cruise over there, you know, at that 4 to 6 deal. They had the SRO a couple times. Man, people standing up outside. Man, I walked out. Hey, what y'all do? Yo, man, we waiting to get in. I said, we got a big table. We just left.
We're going to take a break here on Weekend Kickoff at the Treasure Chest Casino. Coming back with more of Sports Talk, our special edition, right after this on WWL, folks. Back here on Weekend Kickoff, we're wrapping up the first hour at the Treasure Chest Casino. We're at the Game Bar and Grill. Stop by, say hey, and stick around for some action tonight. We got Thursday Night Football, MLB action, as well as some college going on as well. Mike, it's just been this time of year, right? We got every single sport, it seems, at our disposal. Even NHL has started.
It's a crazy thing because NBA starts next week.
Right, exactly.
But you can bet on preseason game. Man, this is an old Diliberto line, but, man, it would fit him. But he was like, man, you got to be a degenerate gambler to bet on preseason football and NBA.
And, and then said, what? Did he make a bet?
No, he was like, no, I should know. I'm one of them.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah. But now the way it is, you can bet on all that. And you think about the playoffs in the MLB, NBA cranking up, college, pro football. You brought up NHL.
Yeah.
Man.
You name it. There's something.
It is something going on. So if you're a sports fan this time of year, man, you in hog heaven the way things are with all the sporting events happening. We're starting to get a little bit of a crowd over here. I think some of the people more – a little bit of baseball early on, but I'm sure that Thursday night game, they'll have a little action. And interesting that the Steelers have not played well on Thursday nights. Interesting.
I'm curious to see. Obviously, the Bengals are a mess right now. Offensive line, we know, is not very good. The defense is hurting, but how much of a difference will Joe Flacco be a quarterback for them?
You heard Mike Tomlin make that comment. Man, why the hell they traded him? the Cincinnati.
He didn't want to play him.
No, I don't want. Man, one thing with Joe, if he gets hot, he can carve you up.
Back with more Weekend Kickoff after the top of the hour news break. Stay tuned, folks. We are back at the Treasure Chest Casino for Weekend Kickoff Hour 2 starting right now. Got a action-packed hour this for you. Talking some Vanderbilt football coming up with the voice of the Commodores, Andrew Allegretta. And then at 5:40, Scott Shanley, Super Bowl champ, Saints pregame and postgame analyst, will join us to preview the black and gold trip to Chicago. And we saw this early on when the schedule came out, Mike. Thankfully, this game for the Saints and all of our Saints radio crew, it's not going to be a cold one out there. It's going to be a nice fall day in Chicago on Sunday.
Yeah, because it's been abnormally warm
right
in Chicago, but now it looks as though the fall weather sort of has hit in a little bit. And, you know, for people there, they're like, okay, we this far in October and the weather hasn't gotten really cold yet.
And the Bears are winning.
And the Bears are winning, you know, and the Cubs had a nice run.
Sure.
The Cubs had a nice run with things, so we'll see how it goes. And, again, got to play keep away against the Bears, and you got to come up with some turnovers.
What's scary is you've seen it all season, Mike, with the Saints defense is the fact that whatever QB they're going against, they seem to have a 100-plus QB rating after the game.
Yeah, and also, too, they haven't fared up well when they play teams with multiple tight ends. They don't match up well against the tight ends downfield. But this team, you know, depending on how much DJ Moore is healthy, and I don't know if he'll play or not, I think they're going to lean a lot on Roma Dunsey. He's the guy, you know, he's the stud.
Sure.
We saw him in college at Washington, him and Michael Penix Jr. They were great there throwing the football, and he's really turned the corner as a receiver. And I think you'll see a little bit more, certainly, of Luther Burden III. We saw him, University of Missouri. How he still got out of round one, I don't know. Man, I was a big fan of Luther Burden. he was a terrific route runner. He's quick, catches the ball well. He's not a lengthy guy. But, man, can he make something happen after the catch? And we'll see about what happens with Swift at running back. I think that is something to watch as the week goes by.
Yeah, definitely, for sure, because the Swift is definitely their workhorse there. You don't have a much of a backfield behind him.
Yeah, and the worst thing is it could open up that they throw in the little short pass,
yeah,
almost like an extended handoff. So I'm sure they'll adjust. One thing with Ben Johnson, it was the most Ben Johnson Detroit Lions coach game as I've seen him as a head coach when they played the Commanders. They really ran the football, short pass, dink and dunk it. Now, the field conditions also had something to do with it, but their ability to run the ball, which they've had difficulties with a good portion of the season, man, really opened up for them against Washington.
You talked about the tight ends real briefly there, Mike. And for you, when you saw Coastin Loveland getting drafted ahead of Tyler Warren, was that any surprise to you?
A little bit of a surprise. I always thought Coastin, athletically, he looked the part. He had not put up the huge numbers that Warren did.
Yeah.
Warren was a one-man crew on offense for Penn State. Okay, my thing is, if I was playing Penn State, my biggest worry is, man, Drew Allar? What? I'm not concerned about him. I'm concerned about, okay, Tyler.
Right.
How I match up against him. He actually would catch passes when he was covered. Okay, they throw it up. I got it. And, man, they had two and still have two really good running backs, and it was about Tyler. So, yeah, it surprised me a little bit, but I think they felt, you know, that the upside with Coastin Loveland was more than what it would be with Tyler Warren. I sort of disagree there. All I know is look what Tyler Warren's doing in the NFL with the Colts.
For sure.
And he's exact same thing he did with Penn State. Okay, you got me? Okay, yeah, you got me. Put the ball up and see how well you're going to cover me. And then he's like a big brute running with the ball down, feels like a big fullback. They've used him, you know, as a short yardage quarterback running the ball. They did that at Penn State. He's a former high school quarterback, so he knows what to do with the football. But Coastin was a really good prospect. I liked him. Long, lengthy guy. He wasn't as bulky as Tyler Warren was. But, man, he could run. He could run like the wind. He's really quick. And Cole Kmet gives you this just huge target guy, former Notre Dame tight end who blocks real well. And so they have the yin and the yang at tight ends, okay? And you can play that. That's when you run the football and you got the two tight ends, and then they'll flank one out, and they kind of give you Kmet one time inside, then he's out. Then they'll put Loveland inside, and then he's out. Because one thing, if you're playing tight end at Michigan, guess what you're doing? You ain't just going out for passes, Jack.
Right.
You blocking. They want you to block. And so I always thought he was a solid blocker, Coastin Loveland. He was not a great blocker, but he was solid inside. Man, that's tough. And you saw against Buffalo, they kind of lulled the Saints to sleep a little bit. They would run the ball. And they saw it one time. Okay, Kincaid one-on-one with Carl Granderson. Come on, Carl. He's not going to cover him down deep downfield. You know, that's not his gig. But when you play that 3-4, guess what they ask you to do? They ask you to cover. Man, Kincaid, he was high school open on that play. And so that was an easy throw for Josh Allen on that one.
No, this Bears offense, I think, is low-key very scary, man. I know you talked about the weapons here. And besides, you know, with the running back, the array of wide receivers, and you just talked about the tight ends, just a lot of weapons surrounding their number one overall pick a year ago, and Caleb Williams trying to give him success, right?
He's the difference. And you can see a little bit more mature into the NFL, understanding where to go with the football. The processing has become a lot quicker for him. He still has some growth in that area. There is still that tendency for him every once in a while, man, I got it. And, okay, I'm going to pull it and take off running with it. But he's been hesitant this year to do that. A lot more hesitant than he was a year ago. People, oh, he's a bust. No, he ain't a bust. Sometimes you want to pull the plug on the quarterback way too quick. But, you know, with Ben Johnson, he does a really good job finding the areas that a quarterback can excel in. Look what he did with Jared Goff. Where he took him and took him to another level in being able to diagnose plays and put him in a position to be a better player. That's why coaching still matters in this league. Yes, give me the more talented team most times. But, man, if I got good coaching and I got better talent, guess what? Steve, you're losing.
No, right?
You're losing. Yeah. You ain't beating me then.
Going to take a break here on Weekend Kickoff, Mike. When we get back, we'll get into the Vanderbilt Commodores with the voice of Vandy, Andrew Allegretta. Stay tuned right after this for our commercial break, and then we'll come back talking a little bit about LSU Vandy coming back after this on WWL. Who dat, folks?
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back here on our weekend kickoff edition of Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino. Come by, say hey to me and Mike. We're here till 7 p.m., then Thursday night football kicking off this evening. Meanwhile, Saturday, we've got an 11 a.m. start, LSU versus Vanderbilt. Voice of the Commodores, Andrew Allegretta, happy to join us now. Andrew, thank you so much for the time, man. How's it been going?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing great, Andrew. Man, what a run for the Commodores, right? I didn't know if this would work with Clark when he first took over. I know he was the linebackers coach at Notre Dame, then became the defensive coordinator there for Brian Kelly. And two out of the first three seasons, it didn't look real good. But, man, last year goes to show, too bad Bobby Hebert here. He would really be patting me on the back. Quarterback makes the difference, huh? Diego Pave, he's doing a fantastic job. And he's college football's version of Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, he's really tough. He's a ton of fun to watch. He's got genuine confidence. It's not fake confidence, guys. It's a real genuine belief that anytime he steps on the field against any opponent, he can be successful. You talk about 23-24, which is that reset you're talking about with Diego Pavia. Yeah. Like Clark Lee talks a ton about everything that they were able to bring into that program from 23-24. Guys, like I still have this very vivid memory talking to Clark after the Tennessee game in 23, where he told me everything we've been doing, it's going to change. And it's one thing to say that. It's another thing to execute the reset really well. And they found the perfect people for the program, whether it's Diego Pavia, whether it's bringing in Jerry Kill, who's got this tremendous track record of being a head coach and resetting programs. Tim Back, our offensive coordinator, is a name that I don't think gets enough credit. Like, he's been a wizard at dialing up plays. So Clark, I think, gets a lot of credit for basically saying, after 3 years, I've figured out what my program needs to look like, and I'm going to execute it perfectly.
And they've been also aggressive in the transfer portal. Man, if my memory serves me right, aren't all five offensive linemen that's starting all from the transfer portal?
Yes, over the course of a couple of seasons.
Like, okay.
We don't call it right guard and left guard. We call it quick guard and strong guard and whatever. One of our guards is a transfer from a couple of seasons ago, Chase Mitchell. So it's not all this season, but it is a offensive line flip over the course of a couple of seasons. Yeah, and we decided to double down in the portal on the trenches. Like, doesn't matter how much resources, financial, whatever you have, at some point it's finite, and we decided to allocate the percentages to the offense and defensive line, and that's made a huge, huge difference for us this season specifically.
Eli Stowers at tight end, because he was a young man that I think had he come out last year, he probably would have been an early day three pick, probably in the fourth round. Decided to come back for another season at Vanderbilt. For people who maybe aren't that familiar with the Vanderbilt program, give him a little bit of a scouting profile on Eli Stowers.
Yeah, big, fast, one of your modern tight ends that can kind of almost look like a wide receiver out there. He's a guy that went into college as a quarterback at Texas A&M, eventually transferred out of there, went to New Mexico State, was maybe going to be a quarterback at New Mexico State, but then transitions to the tight end position and came with Diego Pavia, with Tim Beck, with Jerry Kill. Again, he's just big. He's tall. He's got a ton of speed. I think he runs like almost 22 miles per hour at his height, which I think is 6'2", 6'3"-ish, whatever it happens to be, big-bodied guy. Teams certainly have identified him as a major piece that you have to take out of the offense. His numbers aren't huge this season, but he had 3 100-yard receiving games a season ago, and one of them was the upset versus number one Alabama.
When you look at how they set things up offensively, this is a team that likes to make hay in first and second down and keep it short on the third down situations where you're not putting your quarterback and your offensive line in stress positions. So, and they're one of the top in the country in doing this. And, man, I'm impressed with the scheme offensively to just kind of catch you a little off guard on first and second down. Then it's third and two or third and one. And, you know, you could do a lot of different things off of that, especially when you have a quarterback with the movement skills of Pavia.
Yeah, that's pretty much the whole game plan to me. I think it's going to be one of the biggest factors in our game on Sunday. You know, we're number one in the conference in third down conversions. I would say most teams that execute that are living in third down and three, not third down and nine.
Yep.
You know, I mentioned the fact that I think Tim Beck has been a wizard. This isn't really a true option offense. When you say option, people think about Jeff Munkin and Army or Paul Johnson and Georgia Tech or whatever. It's not that. We don't have A-backs and D-backs, but you've got different looks off of most of the plays, and you do have some option-type plays. You do have straight drop back in there. You've got straight handoffs and pistol. Chris Klonakis is our offensive line coach. He used to be at Nevada when they invented the pistol back in the 1990s. So it's got all of this sort of cocktail in it. And because there's so many different looks and so much motion, yeah, you're trying to go second down and six, third down and two, it converts. And one of the big struggles we had versus Alabama is we didn't live in third down and three. We kind of lived in third down and six and third down and seven, and we didn't sustain enough drives. So if we're third down and three, Vanderbilt this is, against a really good defense in LSU, we're in pretty good shape, and we might win the ball game. But if Blake Baker's defense keeps Vanderbilt in second down and nine or third down and 10, like, that's a pretty good shape for the Tigers.
One of the things when you play LSU now, because they haven't been able to run the football very well against anyone, has been protection, being able to get pressure on Garrett Nussmeier to affect his throw. How has that been from a pressure standpoint and the coverage? One thing with LSU, man, they got receivers that can run. Now, sometimes they don't catch the ball consistently well, but, man, can they run. They really hit the stress button on you because of the speed level. Can Vandy have that type defense to put a lot of pressure on Garrett on a consistent basis?
I think it's possible. I don't know if they will. I will tell you this. Alabama's offensive line was doing a great job protecting Ty Simpson. I think it was one sack from the Florida State game all the way through the Vanderbilt game. And then Vanderbilt had four sacks of Ty Simpson, all of them by defensive linemen, not linebackers, not safeties blitzing. It was by four defensive linemen that got to Ty Simpson. Does that mean they're going to do that again to Nussmeier? I don't know. Steve Gregory is our defensive coordinator. He is not like rush six, rush seven, quite like Blake Baker might be, but he is very strategic and timely with getting at the quarterback. And I'll tell you this, guys, blitzing the quarterback is what totally flipped the game for us versus Virginia Tech. Kyren Drones, whatever struggles Virginia Tech is having this season, is still a darn good quarterback, and they found success in the first quarter. And then midway through the second quarter, Steve Gregory, the defensive coordinator, again, just threw caution to the wind and got after Drones, and it totally changed that game. So can they do it against Nussmeier? Entirely possible. Again, they did it versus Simpson. They've done it versus Drones. I think they made Lenora Sellers uncomfortable versus South Carolina. Will they? I don't. We'll find out. But they've got that in their bag.
Andrew, one of the things in a game that you know, we none of us were doing TV or radio in 1948 because that was the last time Vandy was favored over LSU. But it comes down to special teams and the kicking game. And your thoughts on, because a lot of times when you know maybe you can't match up personnel-wise, you try to win that part of the game. You don't want to tie. You want to win the special teams part of the game. How has that unit for Vandy played this year?
It's been pretty good each of the past couple of seasons. In fact, it's been one of the stronger things for Clark in his 5 years here at Vanderbilt. But as far as this team specifically is concerned, you know, the punting unit has been fine, you know, quite frankly, through the first 4 games of the season until we hit Alabama and kind of down the stretch, we didn't really need to punt a ton. Like, we scored 55 points versus Utah State, scored a bunch versus Charleston Southern and Virginia Tech, so that wasn't really a huge concern. I think we're still figuring out about the punting units, the punt coverage. Martel Height is our punt returner. A season ago, he led the conference in punt return yardage. I think people are avoiding him specifically. And then our kicker is one that we're going to trust. Nobody's perfect, so if you told me he misses a field goal on Saturday, absolutely believe you. But he set the program record last year with a 57-yarder versus Missouri. He also has the career record for most 50-plus yard field goals. And he's just a junior. He didn't play at all as a freshman, so he did that entirely through his sophomore and junior campaign so far with like 6 of them. So if we have to trot out Brock Taylor for a game-winning field goal, 40, 45, 50, 55, you know, heck, if he needed to hit a 60-yarder to win the ball game, they're going to send him out there. Range is not his concern. I don't even know that accuracy is his major concern. Again, nobody's perfect, but all things considered, if we need to win a game through special teams, I think Vanderbilt feels fine in that position.
I think this is the ultimate under game, to be honest with you. When you look at it all across the board, it may come down to that. Either Ramos for LSU, the kicker you have at Vanderbilt, hitting that field goal, because I got a feeling this is going to be a razor close game, and LSU don't play good at 11 o'clock in the morning. And their fans, then most of them ain't woke up good at 11 a.m. in the morning. They ain't had that first good downer yet, you know what I mean?
I know. You need a little cafe au lait or something like that to get into the bloodstream before you start firing. 11's kind of early.
No. They need something stronger than that.
Okay. Well, like, look, man, I'm just throwing the references that I got in my back pocket. You drop whatever you want in that cafe au lait. That's totally fine. We'll see. I do think it's going to be incredibly close.
Yeah, I do.
Whether it's under, over, I don't know, but it's going to be a rock fight, guys.
Yeah, I agree with you. Man, what a great job Clark has done there at Vanderbilt. Because, I mean, would any of us have thought 5 years ago, LSU roll into Vanderbilt and they are 2.5-point underdog? I don't think anybody could have guessed that.
Yeah, Andrew, I think there's probably a lot of Vanderbilt fans that wouldn't have guessed that. But, you know, there's a lot of belief in Clark. Like, generally speaking, he would tell you to a man, like, everything that's happened.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Happening now, it feels inevitable to him that Vanderbilt would get to this place, and here we are.
Appreciate the time, Andrew. Have a great call on Saturday morning.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, guys.
Andrew Algreta, voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores. That's an 11 a.m. kickoff. You can hear right here on WWLAMFM.com Saturday on the Big 870 AM, 105.3 FM, and the Odyssey app. Coming back with more of the weekend kickoff edition of Sports Talk after this, talking some Saints football, Super Bowl champ Scott Shanley after the break. Weekend kickoff rolling on here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Mike Dettillier, Steve Geller, now happy to welcome in Scott Shanley, Super Bowl champ, to the radio huddle. Scott, how you doing, man? You ready for Chicago?
Oh, yeah, we're ready. There's some good memories of playing Chicago and not so good memories playing Chicago.
Yeah, I hear you.
Scott, when you watch the Bears, and Steve and I have talked about this, and Bobby and I too, man, they got so many weapons, especially on the offensive side of football with Aroma Dunsey and Luther Burden and DJ Moore. I don't know if DJ is going to play this week or not. And then DeAndre Swift at running back and catches the ball really well coming out the backfield. The two tight ends are really good. Man, you got your hands full. Because if you thought the Patriots got weapons, man, the Bears got them now. Caleb Williams is good. He ain't as good as Drake May, but he's pretty doggone good.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You know, just jumping back to Drake May quick, I mean, I'll tell you what, there were some throws he made last week that had me thinking Josh Allen type throws. Yeah. I mean, impressive. They definitely found their franchise quarterback, so congrats to New England, and they got a good coach. But, yeah, moving on to Chicago, I think there were a lot of high expectations for Caleb because he's the number one overall pick, and then you pair him with Ben Johnson. I don't think you've seen that leap yet like you saw. Like, Jared Goff played his best football early on with Ben Johnson with the Lions. So, but also, you know, Jared was a veteran. But I think what Caleb is doing good is he's playing within himself. He's not pushing as much as he did last year. When you're the number one pick, all the eyes are on you, and you feel like you have to make all the plays. So I think he's starting to play within himself. They got a good running game with DeAndre Swift. And then DJ Moore, if Moore's out, that's a huge advantage for the Saints because he's been playing some outstanding football, and he's kind of like a wild card, a Joker-type player. They can run reverses with him. They do all sorts of things. But, you know, they drafted the Loveland kid, the tight end out of Michigan. He's going to be a problem with the mismatches, a lot like Laporta was with the Lions. And then the last player on offense that you're talking about, Roma Dunze out of Washington, he leads the league in third and 15-plus receptions. So he's a big play threat, and they're going to target him a lot, especially on third down.
Man, and watching the Bears defense, and he was a two-time All-Pro player with Buffalo, Tremaine Edmonds at linebacker. I thought he was older than that, and he came out early, but, man, he's just 27 years old. He'd been in the league since 2018. Man, he was a 20-year-old rookie in the NFL, which is really amazing. And, man, he's around the football. You can tell. Really good instincts. Tall, rangy guy that can really run the field.
Yeah, he does a really good job, and especially in that scheme. Obviously, everyone's familiar with what Dennis is doing defensively. You need a guy who can run at that middle linebacker spot. Go back, you know, Saints with Vilma and then DeMario Davis. All these guys who are very versatile, can play sideline to sideline, they will excel in Dennis's system. The safeties are playing really good football in that system. And I'll tell you what, the Bears quietly, they're like kind of this no-name defense where a lot of people don't know who the starters are on this defense, but they lead the league in takeaways. That's always been a Dennis Allen calling card defensively, taking the football away. And they're third in the league on third down, 30% conversion rate. So they're playing really good football defensively, which is allowing their offense not to have to put a lot on Caleb's shoulders and be too aggressive.
One of the things, Scott, they don't do well, they haven't stopped their run well. They're giving up over 150 yards a game rushing. Okay, we ain't Albert Einstein here, but I know what I would do against them. Man, I'm going to butt them in the mouth and try to run the football because, you know, if you're giving up an average of 150 yards plus a game, the Saints have got to get that running game going with Kendra Miller, with Alvin Kamara, with Taysom Hill. No matter how you use all three of them, you got to be able to run the football if you think you can leave Chicago with a W.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think we've yet to see the game plan the Saints put in throughout the week. I think they're sitting there in the coach's office and saying, all right, we want to run the ball. We want to be 50-50. We want to throw the ball when we want to, not when we have to. And you haven't seen the Saints be able to do that yet this year because they get down too early. They get down 7-0, 14-0 out of the gate. Now the game plan changes a little bit. And nobody wants to go into the game and throw the ball 40 times to Spencer. And that's not a knock on Spencer. He's done a great job not turning the football over. But I'm want to see this game where the defense plays well out the gate, and now you can run the football with Alvin and Kendrick. Because I'll tell you what, the one thing about the Bears defense, they are feast or famine. They take the football away. No doubt about it, that's the number one job of the defense. But like you said, they're not stopping the run, and they give up some of the biggest plays in every week is in terms of chunk plays. So I want to see the Saints offense come out maybe get bigger, go Taysom and get Foster out there, get some big tight ends out there because Dennis likes to play a lot of nickel defense and take those linebackers off the field. I think the Saints can run the ball against them.
Scott, always appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much, and hopefully we get another W on Sunday in Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Scott.
Scott Shanley, Super Bowl champ, Saints pregame and postgame analyst. Going to take a break. Be back with more of our weekend kickoff at the Treasure Chest Casino right after this on WWL. on Weekend Kickoff as we wrap up the 5 o'clock hour at 6. We're going to have two more guests. Rich Mowdy, former Saints wide receiver, special teamer, talk some black and gold, plus a little bit about Penn State and what's been going on in Happy Valley. Also get a little insight on the Bears with Michael Jokovic, a reporter for Bears Insider, as the black and gold get ready to take on the Bears in Chicago Sunday noon kickoff here on WWL-AMFM.com and the Odyssey app. And we've talked a little bit about it, Mike. Not surprising to see the Bears a favorite over the black and gold in this matchup, but man, oh man, it's not very often you see Chicago as a favorite in any game.
No, and to be honest with you, like over the weekend, Bob said, give me your, I thought it would be like six and a half. It ended up being a little less, five and a half, but, and it has stayed there. It is locked in at that 5.5. So, again, no money has moved the deal. But playing at home, and I think, you know, for people who gamble, that last image of them winning that game Monday night.
Sure.
Now, man, I was sweating bullets if I'd be a Bears fan with Jake Moody coming out there. I've seen Jake Moody kick in San Francisco. Ooh, that wasn't too good. But, man, they were able to pull it out. You got to give them credit.
Heading to the top of the hour news break, folks. We'll be back with more of Weekend Kickoff at Treasure Chest Casino. Back after this on WWL. We're back into Weekend Kickoff at the Treasure Chest Casino as we get ready for a bunch of football action this weekend coming up. LSU Vandy, Tulane taking on Army, and a whole lot more, plus Saints in Chicago to help us talk ball. Rich Mowdy, former Saints wide receiver and special teamer, joining us now. Rich, thank you so much for the time. How's it going, man?
Hey, Steve. Yeah, doing great. Thank you so much. I'm in North Carolina just getting ready to do a little fishing tomorrow. So
nice.
I'm missing you guys. You know, when I go away to different places of the country, they ask me where I'm from. I said, New Orleans. They said, well, you're going to be disappointed. Yeah, fishing, because we've got the best fishing in the world right in our backyard. So I'm a little spoiled.
Yeah, no, buddy. You're goofballing over there in North Carolina, fishing in them swamps of North Carolina, right?
I'm in the swamp. I'm fishing my bathtub, Mike. You know that.
Oh, that I would agree with. Rich, it got broke, I guess, a couple hours ago. But, man, preactive. Indiana signs Kurt Cignetti to an 8-year extension, $11.6 million a year. Yeah.
You know,
how about
Mike,
that,
you talked about that the other day.
We talked about it the other day.
He would be our first choice. I mean, I don't know what they're thinking, but I mean, he'd have been a great choice for us. But too good. I mean, what he's done in Indiana, shoot, they could be in a national title hunt by the end of the year. They keep playing with it. Great defense. But it was good for Cignetti that Franklin got fired, even though he didn't get the Penn State job. Not a bad gig.
Yeah. I think you won the Powerball. No lottery here. This is nothing but Powerball winnings when you do that. Talk a little bit about the Penn State fan base. Because, Rich, I know you haven't played there in the 70s and always been around that. Your two sons, Patrick and Michael, played at Penn State. That's always, man, a soft spot for you, Penn State and Joe Pa and that particular time frame. But about the fan base there, I don't think I've talked to anyone there that had any confidence that Franklin was going to be the guy to take them to the next level. And yet, look what happened last year. You know, you won game away. It's unbelievable how it is today in college sports.
It is. And, I equate the Penn State fan base similar to the New Orleans fan base. They're so loyal and dedicated. You know, at one time, that was the only game in the area within, 100 miles. There was nothing around State College. It's in the middle of the state. And, of course, now it's built up. But the fans, to get 100, we had 111,000 people at the Whiteout 3 weeks ago against the Oregon game. And so the support has been phenomenal. And, Franklin's he's done a good job. I mean, you can't deny it. A coach comes in and wins 10, 11 games in this division in the Big Ten at a big-time school. I mean, how do you complain about that? But unfortunately, he's done the same things over and over again, which is not being able to win those big games, the Ohio State and last year against Notre Dame. I mean, and losing it the same way with an interception at the end just didn't seem like they were on top of their game and never could get to that point when they win a tight game at the end of the game to make the right calls and do the right things. So, I mean, Flacco, again, he's done a great job. The fans have supported him throughout his 12-year, 13-year career there, but it really was time for a change. And after the, you know, he kind of lost the locker room. And once you do that, and, you know, the fans were booing him and they were calling for his firing, and that's not a comfortable situation for anybody involved. It's too good. Too many good players up there. You got to win.
Yep.
And
you got to develop players, Rich. That's one thing he didn't do well. He didn't develop players well at Penn State.
You're right. And you look at Aller, their quarterback. I mean, at one point they were talking about him being maybe the number one pick in the first round. Well, he's still gone downhill. He's gone backwards, unfortunately. And I feel horrible for him. He breaks his ankle, whatever he did. He's out for the year and not a chance to go prove himself. But he wasn't going in the right direction, clearly. They were doing the same things, making the same mistakes. And that's the frustrating thing, because we have so much talent. And nowadays, you know this, Mike, I mean, we have $30, $40 million on that field, to keep these kids around. The money is stupid to keep these kids around. So now it's not like, okay, yeah, we didn't win. Now it's, you know, you got a lot invested. The university's got a lot invested. Now they got to pay $49 million to buy Franklin out, and then pay whatever they got to pay a new coach to come in. So the money is just crazy, and I think that has an influence, believe it or not, on the kids. And once you lose that locker room and with their attitudes and the money that they're getting paid now, it's a tough, tough equation to solve.
Rich, you were on some teams with the Saints that really weren't very good offensively.
Well, thanks a lot. I was having fun in North Carolina until you said that, Mike.
Yeah,
so
but no, come on. I mean, y'all had a really good offense. You talk about with Archie there. And, you know, later on, Wes Chandler and Ike Harris and Henry Childs, Chuck Muncy, you and I talked about this. I still say this to people today. I think he was the most talented football player to ever put on a Saints helmet. I mean, he could play.
I agree.
Tony Galbraith. But you just didn't have a defense. But here's the crazy thing about you, and I had to go back and look this up. You lost more games. You won a team that lost more games in your rookie season than you had your entire college career.
I know.
Yeah, that's nuts. Because you lost 11 games in 77? 11. Yeah. You didn't lose that total in your college career.
We only had 14 regular season games. We had six preseason games back then. It was only 14 games. And that was, you know, the frustrating part was just the management of the evaluations of these players and some of the people we brought in. It's like, you know, a 2-year-old could have picked some of these kids. And it was more of the organization. I mean, everybody on the team wanted to win. We just didn't have the tools around us to do that in the direction. It was just so frustrating. But yeah, it was tough times back then.
but thinking about it today in that locker room, the Saints just winning one game, and you're in that locker room and you're close, but you can't kind of seal the deal. And, you know, a lot of times you bring this up to me. Sometimes you're just not good enough. Sometimes you're just not. And that's with this Saints team today. They close, but you're not good enough to win these type games. From your mentality as a professional player, how do you deal with that weekly when you know you're not going to get that much better throughout the season, but you have to deal with that aspect of it also between the ears?
You know what? I felt like I was blinded by it. I think you're blinded by it as the player. You're just thinking about doing your job, getting better at what you do, and you kind of hope that it all comes together. But I mean, every year before the season, I said, "Oh yeah, we're going to win the Super Bowl. We got to go to the Super Bowl." That was the thought pattern. Not realizing you're not as analytical. I mean, maybe the guys today are, but it was pure football back then. You know, the money was decent, but not phenomenal, not what it is today. So it was all about just playing football. You just loved being out there. So you weren't quite as analytical as some of these guys are to say, you know, we don't have a defense and we don't have a running back and we can't run the ball, we can't do this. You just went out and played as hard as you could. Unfortunately, we couldn't play hard enough to win. but I think everybody has the same idea. You wanted to go out. And what happens is after six or seven losses in a row, and you got close a couple of times. I remember our eighth game we played in Miami. We should have won it. They took a touchdown away from us from Mike Harris at the end of the game in the end zone, which is unheard of, the pass interference. And after that, we just tanked. I mean, you just let go of the rope. And once you lose the locker room, it's really, really tough. And kind of what happened to Franklin, it's really tough to do anything positive. And we tanked. We got lucky and beat the Jets in a snowstorm up in New York.
That was a crazy game.
I think Tommy Myers had an interception at the end of the game to seal it. But that was kind of bittersweet. At that point, everyone had their cars up in New York, and we drove home from there. We didn't even go back to New Orleans to do a physical. We all left. Went home.
Physical a little bit later, man. I'm all good. Rich, we've talked about this on the television show. Spencer Rattler has really played better than I think any of us would have thought. He's a much more accurate quarterback. He hasn't turned the football over. There were sometimes the receivers haven't given him support there and some catches that they should have made, and they didn't come down with it. This right now, this is a deal of almost every week it's penalties, drop passes, those sort of things just sort of add up. But it's not the quarterback. It's not Rattler at this stage that you could point that finger toward and say, well, he should be replaced for this week.
No, it's a discipline. And I mean, Bobby got on me the other day because they had 7 penalties, but not critical ones. But, seven penalties and then 8 penalties this weekend and then 11 before. It's a discipline thing. It's a sign. It's not the cause, but it's a sign of what is not happening on that team. I love Rattler. I just think he's a gutsy kid. I could tell in his attitude he was going to give you 100% every time, and he's just going to get better and better. Whether he's an all-pro or not, I don't know, but you got to have the help. We've got some pretty heavy receivers out of Olave's got to do a much better job. They're just not finely tuned. They're not the Ferrari right now. They're running around like a little Volkswagen. Sometimes they start up and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they catch, sometimes they don't. You can't fumble in critical situations, Johnson. You can't do that. You got to be, your head's got to be in the game 100%. And some of the players are just not. So they just don't have it together. I like Kellen Moore. You got to give him a chance. You got to give him they're coming from square one. It's coming from scratch, so they had a lot of holes to fill. But you're right. I think Rattler could be a winner in this league without question, but you got to get some help. You really have to get some help. And it starts at the offensive line and the defensive line, right?
Yep, that's where you're going to win it.
No matter how good your skill set is, receivers and Kamara is still great, but you got to have the line to do some things, and they're just not up to snuff yet.
Real quick question before we let you go. How did Mike like playing for Dennis Allen? Because you came to practice with me last year. I could just tell by Dennis Allen when he saw you, there was, the hug, handshake, everything else. But Mike playing for Dennis, his thoughts on the type of coach, not necessarily a head coach, but as a position coach coordinator that Mike thought Dennis was.
Oh, Mike loved Dennis. I mean, of course, I got to go back to Saints were very good to Michael as well. But, Michael's one of those 100% players. Everybody wants that kind of kid in the locker room. And Dennis Allen knew that. They had a great relationship. Michael thought Dennis was one of the smartest guys that he had played for defensively. I mean, and coming out of Minnesota with Zimmer and those guys, which is a pretty complex defense, Michael understood that. And Dennis was... they had a great relationship, and Michael had a great deal of respect for Dennis Allen. Head coaching's a whole different animal.
Yes, it is.
As you got to be a politician. You got to keep that players happy. You got to keep the owners happy, and not everybody can do that. But Dennis is a great guy. Really, truly a player's coach. And I think Michael had a great relationship with him, and still does, obviously.
Rich, don't catch too much shoe pick in North Carolina.
No, shoe pick. I'm going. We're getting some bull reds, and we're going to get some Spanish mackerel tomorrow. A little smoking fish.
Awesome stuff, Rich. Thank you so much for the time tonight.
Thank you, Rich.
Anytime, Steve. You guys have a great show. All right, Mike. Talk soon.
All righty, bud.
That was former Saints wide receiver and special teamer Rich Motti here on Sports Talk, our weekend edition, kickoff special edition, as we get ready for Thursday Night Football coming up at 7 p.m. on 105.3 FM. It's going to be the Cincinnati Bengals and Pittsburgh Steelers facing off. Coming up next, though, we're going to get into more of the Chicago Bears with Michael Dojak, reporter for Bears Insider, coming up on Sports Talk Weekend Kickoff Edition on WWL.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on our weekend kickoff of a Sports Talk edition at the Treasure Chest Casino inside the Game Bar and Grill. You can join us here every Thursday as we gear up for Thursday Night Football this evening. But we got a big one on Sunday, folks. The Saints making a road trip to Chicago, helping break down the Bears side of things. Reporter for Bears Insider, Michael Dojak, joining us now. Michael, how's it going, man?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, Mike. Man, the Monday night game, sometimes you got to be lucky and sometimes you got to be good. They were both. Jaden Daniels turning the ball over on the blotch snap and the handoff to the running back and made the most of it. Man, the DeAndre Swift turn up big. And I think the Bears needed it. They hadn't really ran the football that well. But Swift really gave them a big plus in the running game. And it looks as though maybe that front five is starting to kind of piece it together, because that's like a dance group, you know, five guys playing at one, and got a lot of new pieces along that offensive line.
Yeah, you were kind of waiting for them to kind of put it all together, right? Like, heading into the bye, Ben Johnson was talking about how, you know, the run game wasn't going, and he made it a point to say that it wasn't DeAndre Swift's fault. Like he said, you know, it's me as a play caller, it's it's the blocking, it's the play calling and all that sort of stuff. So I mean, you kind of saw it all kind of come together once everyone was kind of on the details, like the coaching staff talked about this week. You saw, you know, both Darnell Wright and, you know, Theo Benedict, the left tackle, really setting off the outside. So DeAndre Swift had a lane to go to. And you saw the wide receivers blocking the most they've had all season as well. So, yeah, I mean, you kind of saw what this running attack can be once everything kind of comes together. You know, it'll be interesting to see whether they can continue that against the Saints. But, yeah, for at least for one night, you kind of saw the potential here with the running attack.
Kind of give us a little scouting report of what Colston Loveland. A lot of people, including myself, I thought Tyler Warren was the better prospect, more ready for the NFL. Now, down the road, Colston, you know, he might piece it all together. Tall, lengthy guy that can really run. Give us a little bit of a breakdown of how his rookie season has gone so far.
Well, you know, Colston's rookie season's kind of been a little bit tough here because obviously he missed all of the offseason because of a shoulder surgery that he had in January. So he didn't have an offseason. He comes into training camp. He kind of, you know, gets situated to the NFL life and that sort of stuff. And then, you know, week one, they use the tight ends to kind of protect, you know, the outside, especially since the offensive line wasn't set against the Vikings and Brian Flores' defense. And then week two, you didn't see much either. And then that's when Ben Johnson was kind of like, all right, like I need to get the tight ends more involved. And then in week three against the Cowboys, the first target of the game went to Colston Loveland. Caleb Williams overthrew him. And then later on in the game, like on the next drive, he hits him for a big completion. But then Colston Loveland has his hip hurt. And then he misses the Raiders game. And then, you know, he comes back against the Commanders. So, you know, it's kind of been tough right now to kind of tell what, you know, he is, but I don't think any of it is really his fault. Like, he's had the injury. You know, Ben Johnson's talked about how, you know, he hasn't used the tight ends maybe as much as he would have. So it's kind of been an incomplete so far with Colston. I think Colston has shown you in spurts that he can be a pass-catching threat. He can get up there and get it. I just think you need, you know, you just need him to be healthy, and you need Ben Johnson to call on him a little bit more than he has in the first five games of the season.
One guy who's made the turn this year, and you can see, much more confident in his play. He's become a better route runner, Roma Dunze. And you could, last year, you know, that was some hit and misses with him. I'm impressed with what I've seen on film and watching him this year. I think he much more crisp route runner, much more on rapport, certainly with Caleb Williams.
Yeah, I think Rome's proving that he's going to be your number one receiver here. I think he's becoming that X receiver. He's going to go up there and get it. You know, he had a good start to the season. He had a couple big, you know, big games. A little bit quieter against the Commanders. I know Caleb took a deeper shot to him that didn't land on Monday night. But yeah, I mean, Rome, he's a guy you took with the number 9 pick last year, right? Like, you know, Caleb Williams was the, you know, the number 1 overall pick, the star, the, you know, the, all those things. But, you know, 8 picks later, you had Rome Odunze in there. So I think he's a good kid. He works hard, and he's kind of taking the big steps this year. And I think Ben Johnson, you know, as Caleb and Rome kind of get more in a rapport in Ben Johnson's offense, I think you're going to see more and more out of them in those, you know, long shot situations, or even sometimes, you know, you going into the middle.
Tremaine Edwards, it was a guy, man, I really liked when he came out of Virginia Tech. Long, lengthy linebacker, 2-time Pro Bowler with the Buffalo Bills. The Bears were able to get him in free agency. He's a good fit in what Dennis Allen wants to do, especially playing in the middle, and that his ability to run the field so well. Man, he got some giddy up in that step, and I was just telling, man, he's just 27 years old. Oh, man, I would have bet a lot more money that he was older than that since he came in 2018, but he was still he was a young puppy when he came out of college. A little bit about Tremaine Edwards, who he's got a nose for the football, always around it and making plays.
Yeah, he's got a nose for the football. I think, you know, he's kind of, you know, through the first 5 games of the year kind of shown, you know, his leadership, right? I don't know if he's necessarily, you know, if he's, you know, creating too much havoc or anything like that, but I think he's showing you the leadership that you need, especially with the injury that they had to T.J. Edwards here at the start of the season. They had Noah Sewell kind of come in here at the other, you know, linebacker spot. So, you know, Tremaine has kind of provided that stability. You know, he gets the tackles, he gets to the, he gets to, you know, whoever has the ball. You know, do teams kind of pick on him a little bit early on this year on the running attack? I think they have, and he's been the first to say, like, listen, we got to do a better job of shedding blocks. We got to get a better job of tackling in space. So, I think Tremaine has been a really steady leader for this team ever since he signed with the team 3 years ago. Last year was maybe a little bit of a downer, you know, year for him. But I do think, especially with Dennis Allen coming in, I think he's kind of asserted himself back as a captain and has been kind of that consistent rock that a defense needs.
When I look at what's happened with them along their offensive line, I was a big Drew Dahlman fan, even though he played with the Falcons. Really good technician, undersized guy, but, man, he fought like hell. He's a tough guy in the middle, and then you guys go out and, you know, you get Jonah Jackson from the Rams and Joe Tunney, who's played a lot of football at guard and tackle with the Chiefs and with the Patriots before then. You look inside for the Bears.
Yeah, I mean, you got a completely new interior. They completely revamped it. They got 3 new guys in there. 4 out of the 5 are new linemen now that Theo Bennett is in there at left tackle. But, I think you're seeing, you know, there were some hiccups at the beginning of the season, as you're going to expect with any team, let alone, you know, guys who are just trying to get, you know, to know each other. But I think that Commanders game kind of showed you, you know, what the potential is there for the interior and for the O-line in general. But I think you saw, you know, I think the 3 of them, especially in the interior, you mentioned, you know, Dahlman, Tooney, and Jackson. I think they're getting in step with each other. And you saw that, where Caleb had a pretty safe pocket. You know, he had a scramble a couple of times, but DeAndre Swift was able to kind of execute based on what he was getting up the middle too. So I think you're seeing that consistency more and more, and that's exactly what this team needed. I mean, last year, with all the issues, you know, Caleb being, you know, sacked a team record 68 times last year, you needed consistency, and that's exactly what you're getting so far. You know, can the Drew Dahlman Caleb relationship be a little bit better? You know, there are a couple of high snaps. I know it was obviously raining and misty on Monday, so there was a reason for that. But I do think you have to be really encouraged about the interior of the offensive line and how much they're kind of getting, you know, in sync with each other as we move on here.
One guy I know really well, scouted him coming out of college, and he goes to the Titans, Kevin Byard. Man, was one hell of a player. Now, he's becoming almost, how do you would say that, an old pops in this business. He's played quite a few years in the NFL. His leadership and stability at that safety position, because, you know, I think Kevin was with the Eagles last year, Kevin Byard. So I think he's a nice addition to that secondary for the Bears.
Yeah, Kevin's been a good veteran leader, you know, the 2 years that he's been here with the Bears now. I think, you know, he kind of, you know, it's been interesting because Kevin's kind of coming into a contract year this year.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, all right, like, how much are you going to, like, do you need a 30-plus-year-old safety at this point? Is this kind of his last year? And I think he's proven his worth so far in the first five games of the year. He's had an interception in back-to-back games. It was against, you know, the Cowboys and the Raiders. And he's really, you know, leading. He's a really important leader for, you know, for a defense that kind of needed some leadership after last year and how everything kind of went, you know. Retaining him was really important, I think, because a lot of guys look up to him. He provides that plug for them. And I think, you know, he's a good guy to lead, you know, Kyler Gordon, you know, Jalen Johnson, Jaquan Brisker, you know, all those guys. I think he's a really important leader for them. And he's been able to play well so far, too. So, yeah, I mean, Kevin Byard's done a great job so far with the 2 years he's been with Chicago. And you have to be encouraged by, you know, not only what he's doing on the field, but what he's doing off of the field as well.
One of the matchups I want to watch Sunday, Montez Sweat going up against Taliese Fuaga at the right tackle position. Montez mostly plays left defensive end. And Montez, the guy, if you're going to get a pass rush, is going to come from his side. And, man, he's relentless.
He is relentless. He's got a, you know, here in Chicago, I think they want to see more of him, especially after they kind of, you know, traded a second-round pick and gave him that big contract a couple years ago with the Commanders. And, you know, last year was kind of a down year with, you know, with some lingering injuries that he dealt with. He had a big game on Monday. Obviously, he forced that fumble that T.J. Edwards was able to recover. You need more of that. I think that's been the common theme here, not only for Montez, but just the whole pass rush here in Chicago, where you got to start creating some sort of pressure because, for the most part, the secondary has been creating turnovers without much pressure at all on the quarterback. So this would be a really big opportunity for Montez, especially at home. I know it's supposed to be a little bit sloppy at Soldier Field because of the rain that's forecasted, but, you know, for Bears fans and for just Sweat himself, I think you kind of want to see an elevation in play. And yeah, I think you're going to start seeing that, especially as Dennis Allen has consistently kind of switched some guys around. You know, against the Commanders, he, you know, put defensive end Dio Dangbo, their top free agent, signing over the offseason. He put him in inside a little bit, and then they put out their second-round pick, Shamar Turner, a defensive tackle, more on the outside just to kind of mix things up and kind of give guys different looks. So I think if Dennis Allen's able to do that, kind of create some more pressure, some more, whether that's through the middle, whether that's through the onside, I think that'll definitely open things up a little bit more for Montez Sweat, and that's someone that, you know, the Bears really need a lot more production from at this point.
Michael, always appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much. Looking forward to this matchup Sunday in Chicago, noon kickoff. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, have a good one.
Michael Dozhak, reporter for Bears Insider, joining us there, breaking down the 3-2 Bears getting ready to host the 1-5 Saints on Sunday, and a 5.5-point favorite for Chicago in that one. Yowza.
And some key injuries, you know, because we don't know about DJ Moore, and now you don't know about DeAndre Swift. You know, so for the Saints, at
the least, stars could be aligning.
I ain't saying that. I'm just saying there's some key injuries there of them not having DJ Moore.
We'll take
any positive
news.
We don't know
news.
Anything about the, you know, how bad it is with DeAndre Swift, that he all of a sudden pops up on the injury list. Steve, I always think that's suspicious.
Yeah, well, like I said, yesterday was at least it was a walkthrough for them, so it wasn't an official, you know, practice for the team. So curious if anything happened last game or if the injury maybe occurred in practice for DeAndre Swift. But I hear you. Seems like some kind of shady business going on.
Yeah. And listen, you got to report every little injury. Oh, man, you know, man, coach, I got a little bit. I feel a little bit. Okay, I'll put you on the,
yeah, right,
on the list. So, okay. Let's see. This is tomorrow. That's the one I want to see.
The important one, right.
That Friday one is the important one.
We're breaking here on Weekend Kickoff at the Treasure Chest Casino. Be right back with more right after this on WWL, folks. Another weekend edition kickoff, getting ready to wrap up here at the Treasure Chest Casino. We're inside the Game Bar and Grill. Thursday Night Football upon us. Looking forward to seeing the battle of Joe Flacco taking on Aaron Rodgers. And a little bit surprised to see the Steelers a 4.5-point road favorite in this matchup. I get Cincy has struggled this season, but man, oh man, 4.5 road favorites, a little hard to stomach for me.
Yeah, I didn't think it would be that high, I'll be honest. I thought this would be a 3.5 deal or a 3 where you got to make your choice because it almost looked like a field goal game. And already with Dodgers 1-1 with Milwaukee, that's another thing. A lot
scores.
Of people are watching here, watching the Dodgers and the Brewers.
They're in the bottom of the sixth.
They got a lot of closet Dodger fans around here.
That's what happens when you start winning.
No, even before. They always had a big Dodger kind of around them. Almost like Lakers. Go to a Pelicans-Lakers game. Sometimes you don't know who's the home team.
Oh, that's for sure, right.
On that deal. But they got a lot of people that have followed the Dodgers when they were kids and had their parents or grandparents follow the Dodgers. And so, yeah, they kind of picked it up.
Way back in the day when I moved here, I didn't understand. One of the early nights I got to go out and someone brings me to a Chicago Cubs bar. And I'm like, why is there a Cubs bar in New Orleans?
I can tell you.
I got the whole story about WGN, right.
Okay, because, man, you know, kind of growing up. I didn't grow up with cable until I was in my mid-teens. And then TBS with the Braves, WGN with the Chicago Cubs. You had a couple generations that grew up watching that. Grew up watching it.
Yeah.
And so, and it became a big thing. Listen, Harry Carey, you know, they were doing skits about him on Saturday Night Live.
For sure.
You know, but WGN is the one who really threw that out in TBS. You know, when Ted Turner had it and he had CNN and they're all that sort of thing rolling at that time, man, that was a lot of people that grew up Braves fans. A lot of them grew up pulling for Atlanta. And, you know, they remember Dale Murphy and Bob Horner and that group and then Maddox and everybody that became pitcher, Chipper Jones.
Sure, yeah.
Chipper used to live next to Bobby. They got, man, they got some stories. I done heard Chipper's side of it, too. So that's pretty good.
You know, Mike, too, a lot of, I guess, a decent amount of Astros fans. And I know the Zephyrs were
got a lot of Astros fans. A lot of Astros fans. Because kind of growing up, that was the team closest to you.
Yeah.
And so you'd make that trip to Houston to go watch the Astros and catch a couple games and that sort of thing. So, yeah, a lot of Astros fans. And we got somebody work at the office that's as big an Astro fan as that you'll find.
Looking at some preseason Pelicans action going on right now in Orlando. You can hear that on 870 AM. The Magic have a 55-41 lead, about 4 minutes left till halftime there in Orlando. We'll see what happens.
Orlando
right
got
now.
A damn good team,
oh,
is all
sure,
I can
no
tell
doubt.
You. They one of the teams that a lot of people that have put money on, that they feel as though they can make this a long stretch. They got some really good young talent on that Magic team.
Mike Jordan Poole has 10 points for the Pellies in 13 minutes played. Also 13 minutes of action. Zion Williamson, 12 points, 2 rebounds, 4 assists for him.
Now it's time to bubble wrap Zion. It don't count right now.
No, in the
that's
regular,
the way I look at it.
We'll
it doesn't count.
We'll be talking regular season basketball soon enough on Wednesday. They open the season in Memphis.
Exactly. And so, hey, listen.
Like you said, I've seen enough. I don't need to
seen
put
enough.
Him out there anymore.
You know what? Hey, you guys worked the court for a while, kind of understanding one another. This will be an interesting look at the Pels this year because I think if they can stay healthy, and in particular Zion, he's the guy. If you can stay healthy, you might surprise some teams this year of how well you can play. But, again, everything revolves around that one dude. You can say it's a team game. Yeah, it's a team game. But that guy got a lot more talent than anybody else.
Mike, how you feeling about the home teams this weekend? Tulane, LSU, Saints.
I like Tulane this week, and I don't have to play that quarterback anymore, that Brandon guy. Oh, thank goodness he's out of I ended the show with Coach Sumrall. I was like, just watch, you don't sneak him on the field.
Yeah.
He ain't got no more eligibility. But I'm really confident in Tulane. I think, man, they were embarrassed last year against Army, and I'm talking about embarrassed. But that quarterback ain't there no more. He's long gone, Pecon. I like Tulane. I think LSU squeaks this out in a tight game against Vandy.
I like the Tigers' defense here, too.
Yeah, I like their defense here, and I think this may be, end up being a field goal situation, and maybe Rojas coming in to kick you one to win it. If this game was in the Dome, I might feel different, but I like the Bears.
Yeah, I unfortunately agree with you on that one, Mikey. It's a tough go for the Saints. We know three of their next four on the road. Thanks for tuning in to Weekend Kickoff, folks. For Mike Dettillier, Luke Augusta, I'm Steve Geller. Have a great weekend, folks.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.